We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land where this podcast episode was produced. SBS Italian pays our respects to the Cammeraygal people of the Guringai Nation and their elders, past and present. We also acknowledge the traditional owners from all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands you're listening from today. Italian cuisine is one of Australia's favourites, and there's no doubt Italian cuisine is a celebrity in the world of food. But there are many dishes, weird and wonderful specialities that don't make it beyond the Italian border. How about a bit of chocolate and candied fruit on game meat? My name is Massimiliano Gugole, and in this SBS Italian podcast series, I'll tell you the story of ugly dishes that tell us something new about Italian cuisine and the love that Italians have for food. Today we're heading for Tuscany, one of the most beloved Italian regions, especially for those visiting from abroad. Yet the local cuisine does not have many specialties that have had international success. Today's dish is little known, ancient, uses uncommon meat, and combines it with an ingredient usually reserved for desserts.
No, I'm afraid that doesn't do it for me.
I can't exactly say what it is, but it looks like nice, chunky, sort of stewy thing.
It is off-putting. It's, yeah, weird looking. Yeah, it's very browny and it doesn't look good.
Yep, into a ragu, and there's the pappardelle. Oh yeah, I'd have that in a heartbeat.
That would be probably very nice and lean.
Cinghiale al dolceforte, noble and old-fashioned in the name already. Very popular in the Renaissance. But what are its chances to survive in our contemporary world? We'll talk about it today with author, food writer and photographer and excellent cook, Emiko Davies. Hi, Emiko.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Good to have you. Can you describe cinghiale al dolceforte for me and for those who are listening? What is it?
Cinghiale al dolceforte is a very delicious, I would say, luxurious tasting wild boar stew. And it is quite a particular stew. It's not just your regular. There's also cinghiale in umido, which is just a regular wild boar stew. But this one has the title dolce forte, like sweet and strong. But what that really is like a sweet and sour sauce that gets added to this stew towards the end of cooking. And as it says, and as you said in the introduction, it's quite an unusual combination of flavors because this sweet and sour isn't something that you normally have with something like wild boar.
And you have chocolate. Isn't it weird for you to put meat and chocolate together?
There's not only chocolate, but there's also candied fruit peel. So it's kind of like you're making like a Christmas cake or panforte or something like that, and it fell into the wild boar stew and they mixed together and somebody went, wow, this is delicious.
Okay, so it's like it happened by mistake. Probably not. How did you get to know this dish?
I got to know this dish very well when I was writing my second cookbook, Acqua Cotta. And at the time, I was living in Maremma, which is a part of southern Tuscany that is very, very famous for its wild boars. In fact, right below our building where the garbage bins were kept, there was a little pack of like baby wild boars rummaging
really?
Those bins.
That's cute.
They were pretty cute. The mama less so, but they were really present, like physically there and on restaurant menus, but also when they have like a sagra, you know, like a food festival every year, there is a really special one in Maremma that's dedicated to cinghiale. So it's kind of like a symbol of that part of Tuscany in particular. But you find cinghiale all over Tuscany, literally the animal, but also on menus. So it is a really, I would say, a prized menu item, you know, in a trattoria or a restaurant. And dolceforte is probably one of the most ancient ways to cook it and present it. And I think it has a really, really beautiful flavor.
What was about it? What fascinated you so much that you decided to make it?
A really like a special sort of passion for historic recipes. So this one, as soon as I heard about it, I was like, oh, I have to taste this one. Because they say that it dates back to the Renaissance period where there was this love of mixing, you know, sweet and savory together. Some sources say that there is a connection with panforte, actually, which is a dessert that I love. And maybe people might know panforte. It's like a really, really dense Christmas cake. It's full of candied fruit, sometimes chocolate, lots of nuts, and dried fruit as well as candied fruit. That comes from Siena. Siena is very famous for its panforte. And the Maremma, it's not very far to go over the border of Siena into the border of Grosseto, and that's where the Maremma is, where, you know, this dish is particularly well known. So I started digging through some cookbooks, old cookbooks that I love, in particular Pellegrino Artusi's cookbook. So for anyone who doesn't know, Pellegrino Artusi is a household name in Italy. And that's because practically every household probably has a copy of Artusi's cookbook, which was printed in 1891.
Oh, they should.
Yeah, they should. It has a very long name. It's called Science in the Kitchen and the Art of Eating Well. So most people just call it Artusi. You know, do you have Artusi? You just call it by his name. And so I flipped through my copy of Artusi, and of course it was there, Cinghiale in Dolceforte. And so I basically tried Artusi's recipe first, which I think is really the standard recipe. When you taste this recipe of his from 1891, it tastes exactly like the Cinghiale in Dolceforte that you'll taste in any restaurant or trattoria. I'm pretty sure they're all using Artusi's recipe.
Is Dolceforte still commonly prepared in Tuscany, or has this become sort of rarity, something you eat on special occasions or very rarely?
I would say it is a very special dish. It's not as common as an umido, so a regular wild boar stew, or maybe a wild boar ragu even. I would definitely say that Dolceforte is a specialty. If there are people still making it, there are very few.
And you mentioned that you made it yourself, obviously, for your cookbook. Now, have your family, your friends tasted it? What was the reaction?
My husband and family have tasted it, and they were really surprised by it. Everybody who has tasted this, who I've cooked this for, was pleasantly surprised by it. Because, you know, when you just tell people what the ingredients are, and you're like, oh, it's like a stew with wild boar. Oh, and there's sultanas and candied fruit in it. Oh, and there's a bit of chocolate. You know, it starts to sound a bit weird. But you do sort of temper that sweetness with some vinegar, which is really what makes the dish. The forte part is the vinegar part. So you have the sweet and sour. As I said at the very beginning, it is actually like really delicious. The chocolate goes so well. I mean, I'm not using like milk chocolate. I use the darkest chocolate that I can get, or not actually, not even the darkest, around 80% cocoa is a really good amount. It's absolutely delicious. It's very complex. It has a lot more flavor and a lot more complexity than just your average cinghiale stew.
You didn't tell me though the exact reactions that your daughter and your husband had when they tasted it.
My daughter didn't taste it. No.
Didn't taste it. She couldn't.
No, not exactly. No, she didn't taste it. But my husband is not a huge fan of wild boar in particular. Not a huge fan. But no, he liked this dish for sure.
Do you think it's something that Australians might like, or?
That is a good question. I have not tested this out on Australians, but I wouldn't see why not. I'm trying to think of other like sweet and sour dishes that could be similar to this. And what comes to mind are like Chinese dishes. Those are the first things that come to mind. And those are really like very beloved by Australians. You know, like sweet and sour pork is like a standard, you know, now of favorite Chinese dishes. And it does have that kind of flavor profile. So, you know, the candied fruit peel, which is probably, I usually use candied orange or candied citron, is not that different a flavor to the sweet and sour sauce that you might have, you know, in a Chinese dish. So I think if people, you know, really love that flavor, the sweet and sour, they would probably love this dish. The thing that maybe people have to get over mentally is the addition of the chocolate.
Yeah, that's a bit much for many people.
Yeah, right.
Thinking of wild boar. So basically pork, I know it's different, but let's say pork for simplicity with chocolate. It's not usual.
Yeah, but when you think it is used in Mexican dishes as well with pork. So you have pork and chocolate, or chocolate in mole dishes. I've been working on a Japanese cookbook, and one of the dishes that I really wanted to nail is a very beloved dish in my family, which is Japanese curry. It's a beloved dish for most people who know Japanese cuisine. You know, in Japan, people try to make their curry a little bit different from other people's curries. And there are, you know, usually like there's a secret ingredient in the family that you might add to make it just a little bit different, because most people are using packet curry blocks. Have you seen those? They're like waxy kind of blocks, and you just break them off and put them into the stew. And, you know, so to make it taste a little bit different, I've heard of people putting a bit of coffee or maybe like grated apple or grated pear. You know, there's usually some kind of extra addition that might be either bitter or sweet just to make your curry a little bit different. And my mum was telling me that a colleague of hers added chocolate to her curry to make it a little special. And I was instantly like, I was like, I know how that works so well because I've done that with wild boar stew. And so the next time I made a Japanese curry, I added just, you know, it was a little cube of dark chocolate, added it right at the end of cooking. It gave the dish a beautiful, like dark, silky sort of color and texture, and just the right amount of bitterness. It's not so sweet as it is just like an extra depth of flavor when you use really dark chocolate. It worked so well.
Interesting. Also interesting that I think that Italians are not so experimental. You know, we don't like to change the recipes so much.
That's true. And that's also why this particular recipe, I think, is still around in the form that it is, because it is such an old-fashioned recipe. I don't think that a lot of Italians, if they were making this recipe up now, they would not be putting candied fruit peel with the wild boar. This is definitely just a Renaissance dish that just never, ever changed.
Cinghiale in dolceforte is a dish from a distant past. Today, it sounds like a strange combination of ingredients that's either very intriguing or quite off-putting. Someone who is all about history and historical food is Robin Spencer, member of the Society for Creative Anachronism.
I have had, since I can't remember way back when, an abiding interest in all things medieval. The look and the feel of it and the arts and the crafts of the time and the music. I joined and indeed helped started a medieval group in Australia when I was about 20 and have stayed involved in that all that time. And of course, if you're trying to recreate the look and the feel and the ambience, then food is a really important part of that.
What does a medieval group do?
We try and understand how people lived then by doing it, and that can be anything from making food to dancing to making the clothes to learning the crafts. There we have tournaments, people make armour, there are people who get heavily involved in medieval leatherwork and any aspect that you can imagine. It's a very comprehensive thing.
So you also cook medieval food?
I do. I have cooked a great deal of medieval food.
What's your favourite recipe?
Oh, that's a really difficult one. I have so many favourite things. I love the quail recipe that I developed, which is quail stuffed with cream cheese and bay and wrapped in prosciutto and grilled and then served with a pomegranate and cinnamon sauce.
That sounds interesting. Do you cook this food for your family or for special events? Or is it like every day in your house you have medieval food?
Well, dishes like that I don't cook every day. One of the things that the medieval group does is that we have regular feasts, so I would often cook it for a feast. At home, though, there are some other recipes. There's a very simple pie recipe, which is chicken and bacon, which is mixed with egg and verjuice and ginger, powdered ginger, and then put in a case and baked. And that's absolutely delicious. So I often make batches of those pies and we eat them for lunch and things like that. So there are some dishes that have just become part of everyday cooking.
And that sounds pretty, let's say, inoffensive or a little bit for everybody, but there are some aspects of the medieval cuisine which are a little bit more confronting. We talked about using chocolate, for example, with game meat today. Do you have any other things like this, any dishes that you think may not be exactly for everybody?
I think that there are, but I will say that chocolate with meat is not a medieval thing. That's a 17th century thing, because chocolate wasn't even imported into Spain until the very end of the 16th century. And then it was sold through apothecaries and used to make a restorative drink. It didn't actually become part of a food flavouring until the late 17th century. So that's not a medieval thing. But there are certainly other combinations that people find more challenging, that they did eat a lot of fruit with meat. And we do have a couple of remnants that people think of. So people eat like roast pork with apple sauce, or they eat duck with orange, and they don't think that's strange. But in the medieval cuisine, there was a lot more of cooking fruit and meat together. So there's not an Italian, but a Transylvanian recipe, which is fish, which is cooked with a fruit sauce, and that I think most people would find pretty strange. It's actually a bit more like a chutney because it's also got onions and things in it. But I did serve that out at a feast, very small amounts because I wasn't sure how people would like it, but everybody loved it. So I think a lot of it is just that people are not used to things. Most of the medieval dishes are no more different than if you've never eaten Middle Eastern food, for example. So the first time you eat Middle Eastern food, it's really interesting and different and perhaps challenging, but it's not weird. So medieval food's not weird.
Would you think of trying this dish that we're presenting today? So wild boar with chocolate sauce and raisin and candied fruit?
Absolutely. I love trying new recipes. I have a massive cookbook collection from all over the world and I love trying out different cuisines. So yes, I would definitely try that.
Hi, I'm Emiko Davies. Today we're making cinghiale in dolce forte.
I also have to mention that in the Italian version of this podcast, I've spoken with Gabriele Gori, who has an Italian restaurant in Brisbane called Artemino. And he told me that he actually has dolce forte on the menu. Apparently, people love it.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm sure. I think that if I saw this on the menu, I would be picking this dish for sure. And it's also, you know, it's a preparation that goes well, this sort of idea of dolce forte. It goes well with any kind of stronger meat. So it's used for all kinds of game. You could do this with hare or venison, even with duck. So you have this stronger flavored meat and it can stand up to this kind of strong sweet and sour flavored sauce as well.
Do you think this can be done at home or is it too demanding?
No, absolutely. It can be done at home. It's just like doing a stew, really. The only thing that makes it different is that you have the dolce forte sauce, which is actually very easy to do because the sauce you prepare separately.
Before we go too much into the specific, then, shall we start with the recipe?
Okay. We need extra virgin olive oil, always for every Tuscan dish. Extra virgin, not just olive oil, extra virgin olive oil. You need an onion, which will be finely chopped. You need a carrot and also a celery stalk. I usually use a little bit less celery, so I would use half a celery stalk. I noticed that Artusi uses double that. So, you know, according to your tastes, if you prefer the celery, go, by all means, add more in. I use a couple of bay leaves as well, which goes so well with wild boar. Bay grows wild in Tuscan forests where wild boar's forage just seems so perfect to be putting wild boar with bay leaves. A little bit of flour, like only 2, I would say, teaspoons, you know, just to sort of help the sauce thicken. And red wine. So I use about a cup of red wine or 250 mils and about a liter of beef stock. You could just use water as well. When I was testing this recipe and I didn't have beef stock on hand, I just used water. It still comes out very, very flavorful. So beef stock or any other kind of stock or just water. And then what you're going to do is make the dolce forte sauce, and the sauce ingredients you can just mix together separately. And so those ingredients are 40 grams of sultanas, it's about a third of a cup, 30 grams of pine nuts, 30 grams of candied fruit peel. So that could be whatever fruit peel you find or whatever your preference is, but I usually use a mix of orange or citron. Then 40 grams of sugar and 40 grams of very dark chocolate, and I would go like 80% cocoa. You could go more if you wanted to. I mean, there is a little bit of sugar in there, and you need it for the last ingredient, which is red wine vinegar. And I use about 60 mils or a quarter of a cup, but that one is also to taste. So if you feel you really want the vinegar to be like more present, you can add a bit more. If all of this is too much, by the way, you can also do a simpler dolce forte that doesn't have the nuts and the candied fruit and the sultanas, and basically just do the sugar and the red wine, for example. So you just literally just sweet and sour, and you just add that to finish the stew. This variation is actually in Artusi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he tells people if this is too much, you can do a simpler one and just add the sugar and the vinegar. But I would always put in the chocolate because the chocolate just makes the sauce so beautifully silky and adds this like other level of complexity. Artusi also adds prosciutto, to the sofrito as well. Some people do that because often wild boar is very lean, and so to add a bit of fatness to the dish, you can add like the fatty part of prosciutto or some pancetta, something like that, you can add as well. I don't think it needs it, but you know, if you like it, that's a very common addition. Those are our ingredients. And so there's almost like two parts to the recipe, where you have the beef stew part, which you can cook depending on the wild boar that you get. This could take a couple of hours. It could take longer to cook. And it all comes down to the quality of the meat, how old the wild boar was, if you happen to know that information. And, you know, if it was an older one, it can take hours and hours and hours for the meat to get tender enough. You're just letting it bubble away very slowly, you know, checking on it every now and then until the meat is tender enough, you know, and tender to your liking. And then when it gets that to that point, then you add the dolce forte ingredients, which you can even mix together and have sitting there the night before if you wanted to. I think it's a very doable dish if you're used to making like a beef stew. You just have this like extra touch at the end.
So stew the meat and then prepare the dolce forte sauce together. So how do you mix the ingredients? You put them on a pot?
I would use a casserole pot or a Dutch oven or a big saucepan, and first cook the sofrito recipe. So the onion, carrot and celery. I throw those bay leaves in there too at that point, and about 3 tablespoons of olive oil. And that part gets cooked very, very slowly. So the sofrito should cook at the lowest heat that you have on your stove and just let that sort of sweat away. And when those vegetables are soft, then you add the meat, let them color on all sides, throw in that little bit of flour and sort of coat the meat and the sofrito with this little bit of flour. And then you can add the red wine. And at that point, I usually let the red wine sort of evaporate a bit and reduce about halfway. So you can turn the heat up a little bit for it to do that. And when that red wine has reduced a little bit, then I add the stock. And so at that point, you've like flooded the pot, your meat is covered with this liquid, and then you're going to turn it down to the lowest heat and just let that slowly, slowly cook until the wild boar is like meltingly tender. That can take about 2 hours. You know, if you have a pressure cooker, that could really help at this point. It might take 3, depending on your wild boar. During that time, put the lid on it, but like check it every now and then. And if it needs a little top up of liquid, you can add water, you can add more stock, or just water is fine as well. And then for the dolce forte sauce, you just need to mix the sultanas, the pine nuts, the fruit peel, the sugar, and you just mix that together in a small saucepan. With the chocolate, I usually just melt that in a pot with everything together. Sorry, all of the sultanas, the nuts and everything. You add the chocolate and the vinegar, and then you just sort of melt it. You can do that, if you've already put it in a bowl, you can just do that over some hot water, like a bain-marie. And then just leave that there on the side, and you only need to use that as soon as the meat is tender. You just stir that through the stew and it's done. The leftovers are even better than the original. So some people would say to start with, just do this the day before you want to serve it, because when it's had, you know, that overnight to sort of for all the flavors to mingle and sort of settle together, it's even more delicious the next day.
And how do you eat it? Do you eat it by itself or with pasta, or what are your suggestions?
I think the best way to have cinghiale in dolce forte is with something kind of starchy and soft. So mashed potatoes, for example, or a really soft polenta. My pick personally is the polenta. People who don't like polenta, or you don't want to stir a pot for 40 minutes because you've just spent all this time making the cinghiale, you know, mashed potatoes are really good with this as well. Pasta, I've never tried it with pasta, I have to be honest. You know, even some really good crusty bread and, you know, like in like a nice side dish of like stirred greens, like not stir fried. I don't mean like a Chinese stir fry, but I mean like, so in Tuscany, you would have like cavolo nero, for example, or even spinach that you blanch and then you recook it a second time with just some garlic and maybe a little bit of chili. That would be like the perfect side dish to this very rich dolce forte dish.
chocolate doesn't need to be sweet. You will know this if you have pushed your love for dark chocolate beyond 45% cocoa, perhaps up to 70 or even 100. If so, then our dish today, Cinghiale Dolceforte, may seem a little less bizarre with this chocolatey sauce. In Mexico, mole negro is a very hot sauce made with different types of chili peppers, various spices, peanut butter, and chocolate, and it is used together with meat or with tacos. And in Philadelphia, in the United States, you can take your worst enemy to taste the now famous raw onions covered in chocolate. Does chocolate get used like that in Italian cuisine? I chatted to Chiara Caielli, food writer and guest of our previous episode on the sweet call of Befana, to find out. Some of the things she mentioned quite amazed me.
Maybe today we take it for granted as something sweet, but in the beginning, the cocoa bean was more like a spice. What prevails in its flavour is a pleasant bitterness that turns into a little bit of sweetness. I like to compare it to artichokes. They seem bitter, but leave a sweet aftertaste. It was used like a regular spice, like chili or herbs. It's a lot more common in savoury dishes in Italy than one would imagine. For example, chocolate eggplants, a Sicilian dessert where you sear the eggplants and make layers with dark chocolate. Or, as you've mentioned in a previous episode, sanguinaccio from Naples, which is a pig's blood mixed with chocolate. And also pairing it with meat, as they do in the movie Chocolat, I think it's exceptional. If you think about it, also bacon, when cooked right, is very sweet, so why shouldn't it go well with dark chocolate? I'll try one day and make bacon chocolate pralines. Carlo Cracco is a bit expensive for me, but he pairs chocolate with fish, with turbot. I would be very curious, in fact, to taste it, or at least see him preparing it. Another example is baccalà alla cappuccina. So called, as like so many other specialties from Italy and Europe, it originated in Capuchin monasteries. There, the salt cod, a buttery, sweet, soft, delicate fish, is cooked in a pan with a bunch of spices and then completed with a sprinkle of unsweetened coca. And I bought some fresh pasta with coca in it. I tried it with the suggested sauce, gorgonzola and walnuts, and I loved it. I have to say, I could taste coca only because I knew it was there. I made an effort to identify it. Resolutions for 2023? More crazy experimenting with chocolate and coca.
We said dolceforte can be used with a range of meat, but today we're talking about this classic preparation, cinghiale, which is wild boar. Probably not everybody has access to wild boar. Is there something similar to it?
I think you could use any other game meat with this. It's very common, for example, to, well, it was. Now this is, you know, an old-fashioned dish, but it's very common to see it with hare. So you could use hare or rabbit. This would be beautiful with venison as well. And if not, you could even try this with duck, which has, you know, like a darker meat and a stronger flavor as well. So anything that's just, you know, a little step up from your regular beef and pork and chicken, anything that's not those things, you know, you can try it.
You wouldn't do it with the regular pork then, because that could be the obvious, you know, backup.
Rather than pork, I think this might be better with beef. But wild boar should be available. I've been hearing for a long time that Italians who have, you know, a love of wild boar actually import wild boar from Australia. So, you know, it must be there somewhere.
Just go out and find it. And should we find the wild boar, then does it need any preparation? Is there anything we need to know? Because I assume not many people are familiar with how to cook and what to do with it.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because in Italy there are a lot of, like, I would say, old traditions of how to prepare wild boar once you get the meat. And one of the most common things to do, and this is something that a nonna would tell you, so probably like her children and even her grandchildren will tell you this, it is to soak the wild boar in vinegar, like for a day before you use it. And there are a couple of reasons why somebody might do this. My husband, Marco, all of his family, if they have wild boar, they always do this. The first reason is to disguise the gaminess of the wild boar, which I always thought was really strange, because surely the gaminess is one of the reasons why you're eating wild boar. It is really strong. When you marinate the wild boar in vinegar, that vinegar does give the meat a very, very strong vinegar flavor. And so, you know, in the past, this was actually a technique. It wasn't used to disguise the gaminess of the meat, but in the past, this was used to actually preserve the meat before refrigeration. But I'm talking like centuries and centuries ago. So marinating the meat in vinegar meant that you could keep it for several weeks, no problem, without a fridge. And that's very practical to me. And when I think about that, I realize a dish like dolce forte actually makes sense because the meat is so vinegary that you add these sweet things to the dish to counter the already, you know, very sour flavor of the meat. And so today when people tell me, oh, you always have to, you know, marinate the wild boar, I think that's rubbish. You shouldn't do that. Actually, you shouldn't, because then you do actually disguise the true flavor of the meat and you end up with a dish that is very much on the sour side and, you know, could do with a little dolce forte preparation to balance it out. And so when I was researching this book, I met this old woman at a fruit and vegetable stand, as you do, you know, in Tuscany. And, you know, you talk to old ladies about how are you making this? Or they might come up to you, what are you doing with that thing? You know, there's always a conversation at the fruit and vegetable stand. And she was actually a cook in Capalbio, which is the town very famous for its wild boar festival. And she said that you shouldn't marinate the wild boar in vinegar. And so if I got this information from an 80-year-old lady from the very center of wild boar land.
Must be accurate.
I think it is. But she argued that it does disguise the flavor too much and that you don't really need to do it now because now we have refrigeration. You don't need to marinate the wild boar in vinegar. But, you know, for anybody who is like curious about that flavor or what that marinating does, another thing that it does do actually that is practical is it actually tenderizes the meat. So if you do have like a really old wild boar, which I mean, I actually wouldn't recommend because old ones are like tough as boots. But if you do have an older wild boar or you're not sure and you want to shorten the cooking time, you could try marinating it and maybe don't leave it overnight, but maybe leave it, you know, a few hours just so that it doesn't get, you know, too strong a flavor.
You were saying the chocolate changes the dish and also in other dishes it can add something. What's this something? What does chocolate do to savory dishes?
It's really unusual. That one thing is the texture. The sauce starts looking very shiny and very nice and it thickens a little bit. So that's one thing that it does. And the bitterness of chocolate, because dark chocolate is actually very, very bitter. I mean, 80% dark chocolate is not that pleasant to eat on its own. It adds like it's a sort of deep, bitter tone to the dish, but not in a bad way. And it's only, you know, you're using like a small piece of chocolate, so it's not going to overpower the dish. It just adds like this. If you're thinking of like a dish as like a piece of music, it's like a bass note, you know, that supports the other flavors.
Do you think it's more of an acquired taste or do you think that if you try it, you're going to love it immediately?
Yeah, I think if you try it, you'll love it and you'll be like, oh, this is great. I'm going to add this to all my beef stews from now on, you know, or Japanese curries.
Or anything else, really.
Yeah.
More chocolate in savory dishes. Thank you so much to Emiko Davis for bringing us to Tuscany and back in time with this dish, Cinghiale Dolceforte. Thank you so much, Emiko.
Thanks for having me.
How many times have you picked up wild poisonous plants, brought them home and cooked them for dinner? Italians all over the country do this all the time for a wonderful risotto. This episode was hosted and produced by me, Massimiliano Gugole, with support from the executive producer of SBS Italian, Magica Fossati, as well as Max Gosford, Joel Supple and Caroline Gates. A big thank you to the SBS Food team for their support as well. For more SBS Italian content, go to sbs.com.au/Italian. Or to find more SBS podcasts in English, go to sbs.com.au/audio.